So today we, this is going to be really open-ended. Hang on just one second. This is going to be a very open-ended conversation. We're really eager to bring you in and have you all learn from each other. So leading the conversation today, we have Joan Williams. She is the founding director and distinguished faculty at the Center for Work-Life Law at UC Hastings. And today she's really going to be bringing in her expertise as someone who developed the modern flex time policy for law firms and who's advised many organizations. Weird echo. If you aren't speaking, could you please mute? I'm hearing some beeping. Joan, you're on mute now.
Jamie, it sounds fine to me. There was a brief echo, but now it's gone.
Okay, great. So Joan is the founding director of the Center for Work-Life Law and distinguished faculty at the Center for Work-Life Law at UC Hastings, and she will be bringing in her expertise on flex time policies and really expertise on gender and workplace issues. And we've been talking a lot internally about how this current climate impacts women and men often differently in their caregiving and their balance of partnerships. Also joining us today, we have Mary Cranston. She is a retired senior partner and chair emeritus of Pillsbury Winthrop Shaw Pittman, an international law firm. She was chair and chief executive officer of Pillsbury from 1999 until 2006, and she continued to serve as the chair of the firm until December 2006. And Mary serves as the director of Visa, Kimmerer's company, MyCardia Inc., CSAA Insurance, McAfee, and Fiduciary Trust. And she has some really excellent insight as to how other companies where she serves on the boards are handling this current crisis. So, Mary, thank you for joining us. And I'd love to let you open up the conversation.
Actually, Jamie, we decided to take a slightly different tack and just throw it out, first of all, to ask the group, what are the challenges that you're facing? And we want to make sure that we address what's really on people's minds. So either in the chat box or just by unmuting yourself, we'd love to hear what are some of the challenges that you'd love some discussion of.
And for consistency, if you could pin Joan and Mary just so you can see them, that would be helpful.
Yeah, Mary is just by phone, Jamie, so they would be pinning me.
Okay, just Joan.
Yeah. So what seems to be working, what seems not to be working? You can either jump in or type hand in the meeting chat. So you open the meeting chat, you go to the little box on the horizontal toolbar.
Good morning, Joan and Jamie and everybody. This is Gilda Matlick from AECOM. I'll kick off if that's okay with a couple of thoughts on this.
Sounds great.
Great. So we have been just, I'm sure as everybody else is on this call, have been really grappling with how to make everything work right now. We are in the professional services business, providing engineering, architecture, and construction management services to public and private clients worldwide. And so this is impacting our different businesses in different ways. A large majority of our employees are now working from home, so that's good. But one of the very basic issues we are dealing with is managers' expectations, in terms of how employees can be productive. And we're seeing that a lot of managers are still holding on to the sort of, I'd say, old school concepts of FaceTime, lack of trust in employees working remotely. We are, addressing a lot of, a lot of cultural issues, I would say, in that sense. And, trying to ensure consistency across the organization trying to balance people's concerns. So I'm curious if others are dealing with that where, there's just this fundamental lack of trust that people, if they're not in the office, they're not working, therefore, challenges with making accommodations for working from home.
People can definitely jump in with other concerns, but I think that's a great place to start. Mary, do you want to kick that off?
Somebody mute the. There's a lot of noise dragging stuff near the mic. Thanks. You know, this is an issue that is coming up across industries. Many industries have quite a bit of cultural minding of the workers that is not possible in these remote, when everyone has to work remotely. And I think there's a real silver lining to this, because it turns out that the best way to manage large, globally diverse, globally dispersed groups is through an inclusive leadership style, which puts a lot more priority on communication and listening skills and feedback from the employees. And in this time of great strain and stress, that particular style of leadership can make people feel a lot better. So I think where the leadership is asking questions and asking how they can help, and approaching it from that angle, allowing all the employees to speak. And I think it's a style of leadership that tends to bring out the best in people, because instead of feeling insecure by speaking up and addressing concerns, they tend to come on the table and get addressed. So that would be my one of my thoughts about that. I think the other thing that is difficult is it's not just management that has insecurity about productivity. I think all the employees are equally stressed by this. You know, it's a very different thing to try to work from home, particularly if you have small children running around, as I'm sure many on the call could attest. And so I think that is a topic that probably needs to be discussed in these work groups in and of itself. And the whole need to set new expectations and new priorities in order to feel good about what you're getting done and feeling like you're really getting the things that are most important to you, to your family, and to your business done. It requires more conscious prioritization than one might expect, actually. And sometimes talking to people about do that, to really to sit down and really think about your schedule and how things are going and what you need to get done and how you can manage things to get it done more effectively can be quite illuminating. So those are the two things off the top of my head. Joan, anything?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about managers, and I've worked a lot with architects and engineers, so I kind of know the profile. I wonder if it might be helpful to do something which is one of my major messages today, which is basically stems from something that Hastings, my law school, did. We had to shift to teaching classes on this format on a dime. And for me, that was, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago whether I could teach a class of 70 people this way, I would have said, no way. But what was super helpful for me is basically a town meeting of anybody who wanted to attend, sharing what works and what doesn't in teaching large classes on team meetings. And it was phenomenally helpful. I picked up just two or three tips, but all of a sudden I kind of loved teaching this way. And I think that that's a model that deserves to be widely shared. So one thing I would think, Gilda, is maybe having a meeting for managers who want to discuss about what should be the expectations now that people are working virtually, and all then seed that meeting with people to say things like, you know, I'm using this as a time to let go a little bit and really kind of see who steps to the plate. And really messaging also from higher-ups that's the expectation, that the managers themselves won't be held to exactly the same standards they've always been held to. They're going to be held to the standards of how well they get their team through this period intact and getting a certain amount of work done. I think Mary's point about part of what we have to be communicating to people very clearly are what are the new expectations. So I don't know if you think that kind of, it's kind of a virtual digital village sort of situation where you could see that conversation with rigid managers, to use a shorthand, and more inclusive leader type managers, and have them share their experiences. I really want to encourage people to think about this format of getting people together just for an hour to talk about what's working and what's not working for people in their particular role. I think it can be a very powerful tool right now. I know
those are really good points.
One thing I was going to say is I think many companies are realizing that it's hard to get behavior change around this productivity issue. People think they're still going to be held accountable for the original goals. And a lot of companies are kind of jumping on that to make sure they're communicating that what's important has shifted, so that, and people need to understand that nobody's expecting the original game plan. And that can help a lot, too.
Yeah, I know, Mary, we were saying when we were talking about this, that you were saying that in the companies that you're on the board of, managers are just delighted that people are doing about half of what they originally expected and how well it's going. But if the employees don't know that, then that can have a real anxiety effect. And one of the things I worry about is companies don't jump on top of this and redefine expectations is over time. I mean, we may be in this situation for a couple months and people are running on adrenaline now, but they're not going to run on adrenaline forever. And sometimes family relationships are being frayed. Companies can really help that by clearly communicating, here are the new expectations.
Those are really great points. Thank you both. I think the idea that there needs to be more communication and more communication among managers and almost like a manager support group, Joan, is how I would recap some of your suggestions, I think is a great idea. And I think as time goes on and things are working, maybe they're not exactly the way they were a month ago, but they are working for the most part. I think hopefully that will address it too. And then I think the more managers lead by example, so we have leadership who are actually working from home as opposed to someone insisting that they go to the office, a high level leader, which then gives others the impression that they also need to somehow be in the office. So I think we're seeing more and more of that too, is that senior level leaders are now working remotely, which makes it in a way okay, even though legally we're all supposed to be staying out of the office, but culturally it makes it okay. So I think it does eventually work itself out, but it's also a very delicate balancing test, because in a business like ours where the company makes revenue when people are billing on projects, it's a little bit like a law firm, productivity needs to stay at a certain level, otherwise there won't be sufficient revenue, and then there could be job losses. So and the messaging we've been sending out recently especially is acknowledging that, yes, we realize people have a lot going on right now, you're trying to manage kids at home and all of that, and we just so appreciate that you're also being as productive as you're being. So, sort of positive reinforcement as opposed to,
And James C, and we'll come back to your question, but James C is talking about something else we definitely wanted to talk about. He says, how can we support our employees working remotely that are not only trying to do their jobs, but are also managing household, distance learning, and other responsibilities? I think clear messaging is so, so important about this. And Mary, I'm going to lob it back to you to start off that discussion.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think is very important for successful leadership at any point is, and I mentioned it briefly, is this whole concept of prioritization and what's important. And I think in times when people, especially with young children, have this incredibly significant burden thrust upon them of doing the homeschooling, it's really critical to think that through. And some of the ideas I've seen in some of the companies I'm sitting on are working with employees to create a cadence for the day so that all of the team meetings, virtual team meetings, are in a certain time frame, so that people with children or other obligations have a big chunk of time that they can be assured that they're not going to be on the phone jumping back and forth. The other thing, other things are, you know, working, part of the problem is with working parents, normally when the kids are home, they get pretty much 100% of their parents' attention, and they're kind of used to that model. So there's a need to get kids to understand it's a new world, and that they have certain times when they have to be responsible for themselves, do their schoolwork, play by themselves, sit in their room for nap time even if they don't want to sleep. I mean, these kinds of changes in the family dynamics can make a big difference in how stressful things get. And I think sometimes people underestimate how much reorganization is going to help them, and don't put enough time into thinking about that. So I think companies can actually, as part of these team meetings where you're talking about how to be more effective, putting topics like that on the table for everybody's idea. People are experimenting right and left. And I think another important piece of this is to remind people that there are silver linings in every world circumstance, and to that focusing on the things that are different but better, or ways that their family is going to be changed forever that is very positive, and really reinforcing people to focus on that so that there's something good coming out of this at all times. The psychological management of how people are thinking about their circumstances can be quite powerful. And, you know, this is an opportunity for people really to make some changes in how they think about life. They can maybe add some meditation and some other methods to calm anxiety and stress that they probably felt they had no time for before. And again, companies can be quite helpful in giving people resources, legitimizing these kinds of processes for people. So there's some powerful things that can be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, of course, I agree with everything that Mary has said. The way I think of this is like this. If you think about how we traditionally have defined the ideal worker, it's someone who starts to work in early adulthood and works full time, full force for 40 years without a break, taking no time off for childbirth, child rearing, elder care, or really anything else. That model works perfectly for two groups of people. Spouses, typically men married to homemakers, and people without children. But that's not our workforce. Most people are in dual career families. And if you as an employer communicate that you expect whoever you're employing to be the ideal worker, that is a recipe for severe conflict in the family, because you're basically asking the person whom you're employing to put their job in front of their husband's job or their partner's job. And that is a recipe for really serious conflict. So, I mean, either way, if you're the one whose partner is the ideal worker and your employee isn't, then you feel like chopped liver. And if you're the employer who is employing the ideal worker, then you're just fueling conflict in the family. And of course, we're assuming a two-person family. If there's a single person family, a single mother, typically that person is really going to get fried. So you need to really redefine what it means to be a responsible, conscientious worker in this new environment. This is crisis working. This is not ordinary telecommuting, and we'll talk about that. That's Anne's question. But it's crisis working in a context where, as Mary points out, not only do we as employers, because I'm an employer too, have to redefine the ideal worker and make that much more self-conscious, but we have to encourage people who are in their families to not just go with the defaults, because if they go with the defaults, that's a recipe for really serious family conflict. So they just need, as Mary has said, to set up a routine. It's a new routine to communicate clearly with their partner. You're on now, I'm on then. Use resources like Mr. Rogers, or for example, a video calls with grandparents when you're in an important meeting, or activities, as Mary points out, if co-children are old enough, they need to understand this is when mommy or daddy is available and this is when we aren't, this is the schedule. Be very open about it with your partner, if you have one, with your children, and to set up a structure. That is so important for being able to deliver. But the first step in allowing people to do that is for you as the employer to communicate, we're not going to hold you to artificial standards of productivity because we're not in normal conditions. We understand you're going to do what you can do. We have an open line of communication about that. Then provide the resources so they can think through how to have that conversation with their partner. Does that make sense, James? Anything we didn't discuss that you'd like us to, or anybody else? We have a number of resources that in the follow-up materials to help your kids remain entertained. There's also this whole distance learning is part of this. And really, I mean, the idea that all of a sudden people, typically moms, can become simultaneously kindergarten teachers and high school math teachers is such science fiction. I mean, you have to wonder if teachers weren't almost all women, whether people would assume away their skill set so easily. So that, I think it's also important to message to your employees that you understand that if they are homeschooling, but they should also accept the fact that they're not high school math teachers.
John, this is Jessamyn Berniker. I had a follow-up question about that. One of the things that I've been struggling with is how to make sure that the people that work for me who don't have children feel like they're also sort of being heard and that they're in an okay place. I think there's a tendency to assume that they'll carry a bigger part of the workload, which might be reasonable at times, certainly, but I think we also make sure we check in with them appropriately because they may be going through things or they may have family members that have health issues or whatnot. And I've struggled a little bit with how to make sure that everybody's being considerate of that and not feeling like we should sort of dump more work on them than they should be dealing with.
Yeah, thank you, Jessamyn. That's such an important point. Always, if you solve the work-family balance challenges of some employees by overburdening the other employees, that is a very short-term strategy. That's going to lead to real resentment, and understandably so. And the context in which that happens is when the employer hasn't really thought through that redefinition of the ideal worker in the context of crisis working, because then you say, well, I'm letting Janie off, so I have to dump the work on Susan. How is Susan going to feel? And so I think that stems from managers who haven't been realistic and haven't had, for example, these digital team meetings with other managers and with upper level management to really redefine the expectations for everybody and to clearly message, we are not holding you to the form, we are open to hearing that we need to reform our productivity goals. How you are going to be judged as a manager during this period is in inclusive leadership and how you're managing your teams.
You know, one thing I've seen at a couple of companies, and these are fairly advanced in terms of their inclusive leadership style management for leaders, so it's already kind of in the culture. But one of the topics in some of their meetings has been how to help the employees who have small children, and there are really selfless acts of volunteerism from other members who have a little more time to carry more of the load. That's a very different thing. And it gives people an opportunity to actually do something affirmative in this crisis. But it has to be a volunteer situation as opposed to imposed from the top down. So that's another advantage of these discussion groups, is sometimes you'll see that kind of a dynamic get going, which can really help.
Yeah, I think that's, I just want to highlight that, Mary, that's so important. I mean, I was walking to the mailbox yesterday, and a young man in my neighborhood has pointed himself, you know, neighborhood captain, and was offering to go grocery shopping or get medicine for older people in the neighborhood. There's so much goodwill out there, and there are so many people who are behaving in such selfless ways. Of course, the medical personnel and the retail frontline workers for sure, but tapping into that and providing a structure where you can give people a channel for that inherent generosity. And again, this stuff can be done really easily through these digital formats, folks. I'm a new believer in those. The other thing, because we have a number of questions about how to support employees in a way that you signal broad inclusiveness. And we've talked about some, but other elements are, and I know there's some questions about, people are under stress. People have a lot of anxiety right now. And how do you, as an employer, after all, you're not a therapist. How do you, as an employer, acknowledge that they're under stress and provide them resources? And Mary, I'm going to bump it to you to start that discussion.
Yeah, well, I'm sure everybody has examples and things that they can contribute, because this is a broad topic. But I think one of the great stress relievers is being able to talk about things and to have communication. And the real essence of an inclusive leadership style is that the leader asks open-ended questions and listens and becomes a high-level facilitator as opposed to somebody driving the discussion. And in particular, invites in people to speak who are normally more reserved and shy, so that the group dynamic starts to really be able to tap into the wisdom of the group. And it builds incredible teamwork and feelings of trust. And this is a great time to really have all of your managers consciously start to try this and to see how it works for them. And, you know, don't ever underestimate the value of a good crisis to kind of start getting people to experiment with other ways of being. So I would say that's the most important thing. The other aspect is to make sure that people feel totally comfortable in bringing up things that they could use some help in. It's amazing what sometimes when an employer can do that's kind of the sleeves out of your vest for the employer, but can really help the individual, and make sure that they're speaking about these things. You know, whatever helplines you have, et cetera, I hope, you know, those are beefed up and are working well. And, you know, as a leader, you can keep your ear to those helplines and see what kind of concerns are coming up to help direct some of the discussion. So those are some thoughts. Joan?
Yeah, I mean, I think because I work so much sort of with tech and engineers and such, it might be helpful. I mean, it's very helpful for a leader to say to the team, this is a really stressful situation. If you're dealing with a crisis of any sort, you can talk to me. I'm here. Or you can talk to the employee assistance line. These are the resources we have. The line is open. I'm here for you. And I think about, I mean, sort of most leaders would just do that because they're leaders. But then there's that group of people, the sort of Peter principle, we used to call them, people who were promoted because they have great technical skills, not people skills, and now they're managing people. And I think for that group of people, it might be helpful to have a little protocol of this is how you bring this up to your team. I understand you may be in stress. And to provide them a way of talking about this. And as Mary pointed out, if you do have employee assistance programs, it's maybe time to beef those up. it's certainly time to make them widely available to people. And then there's other resources in the resource guide that we're sending all of you. There's, for example, the Headspace app, which is a meditation app. I mean, some companies might consider, I don't know if they're group memberships to Headspace, but something like that. A lot of this is signaling. And I think one of the things that's going to be reassuring to managers is that they signal openness and supportiveness and that I have an open ear. I think many of them might be frightened. Oh, my God, then I'm going to turn into a therapist. And again, this is why these digital town meetings are really important. Like, you know, how my team is dealing with stress. What is my role? They can talk that through and they can hear from other people. You know, you actually don't turn into a therapist. They remember you're their manager, but they do hear that message. And it helps as a pressure valve to relieve the stress. Another question that's come up on the meeting chat is the fear of the backlash. With Mary, tend to be a glass half full person, and I do think that after this period, we are never going back to the old ways of working. I think that a lot of people are trying out telecommuting and remote formats who never would have done it, never would have even considered it. And that's the bright side. The not so bright side is that a lot of people are doing telecommuting in a way that is not really telecommuting. It is, it's like snowstorm cooking, as another board member of mine would say. Yeah, I think it's important for people to give employees to give guidance about telecommuting. Like, you should define your work hours. You should explain how you're communicating with the team, et cetera. But the fear, and feel free to jump in and talk about that more, that there may be a backlash because the situations now for flexible work are so non-ideal. And you want to jump in there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. So I couldn't figure out how to make my audio work on my computer. I think we're seeing this, especially among law firms, at least ours. I'm at Paul Weiss, and we are not a remote work culture at all. And we had to become one overnight. And because these conditions are so extreme, what I'm hearing people say is, I can't wait for to get back to the office. I'm never going to work from home again. And I'm just worried that we're going to throw the good out with the bad. Waste an opportunity to really redefine how we work, and to your point earlier, Joan, redefine what the ideal worker is.
You know, and one question I have, and this, of course, this is law firms, so they're kind of like faculty, a group of extremely brilliant individuals who knows absolutely everything.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Sometimes it's hard in that kind of context. But I assume that you've sent out really clear guidelines for how to make telecommuting work.
Well, actually, I did write something this week that's being reviewed by leadership, literally as we speak. And I'm hoping that will help. And to your point, create some guardrails around all of this and give people a consistent set of expectations and new norms. But I think, I'm just trying to think ahead of how to manage the transition back to, if it ever happens, back to the office in such a way that we don't lose, that leadership doesn't close up to the possibility of expanding the idea of how we work.
You know, I think this is such a good point. And obviously, we want to be ahead of the curve to do optimal good as we move forward. But I also know law firms very well. And I think one of the silver linings of this thing is that it's forcing them to see that working from home is not the end of the world, so that a lot of these held fears may actually be alleviated. And revolution in the law firm is very rare, but evolution is possible. And so I think your instincts are right to be thinking about how can we save as much of the baby with the bathwater here when it's all over. I think your notion of good guidelines so that helping the whole firm kind of regularize when people are going to be talking to each other, which will remove a lot of stress off of everybody, is one of the most important things. There may be other rules of the road and guidelines, and I think the more you communicate that so that people are educated about the optimal ways to make this most effective. Also the client relations, all the clients are working from home too, you know, and seeing this as an opportunity to show client service in various ways that, you know, might not be necessary in a regular market, to keep the lawyers focused on doing good as opposed to freaking out. So yeah. To make the whole thing as positive as possible. And, you know, I think I always found with the lawyers that change in routine is very difficult for them. But the more education you give them, the more tips, the more help, the better. So I hope your leadership goes for it.
Thank you. Can I just say, as long as I have the phone, whatever, to your point, Joan, about town halls, which I love that idea. We're actually we had a call with our family network leadership earlier today, and they suggested a town hall for families. So anybody who's struggling with, you know, caregiving, where we would do the same exact thing, like what's working, what's not, and it would be moderated. We actually have on retainer a working parent coach, Daisy Dowling. I don't know if you know her, but anyway, the point is, you know, I think this town hall concept can be very useful in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. And I mean, some of the other creative ideas are, for example, sharing resources for elders, even going so far, Mary suggested, if your company is able to do something like this, to maybe make IT people available to teach elders who are related to your workers how to do Instacart. And that takes pressure off the people that you're employing in a very big way, to send out a list of resources, for example, how to get groceries delivered, or to have a town hall, one for caregivers, what works and what doesn't. And then, of course, you always seed the clouds to tell people things like, you have to set up, you have to talk to your partner, you have to talk to your kids, you have to set up a new routine, you have to be flexible, you can't hold people, yourself to the, or other people to the old standard that doesn't, it's not applicable now. So you can communicate those messages by seeding the clouds in those town halls. But another town hall could be for people dealing with elder care. I think that those town halls can be very, very effective in a lot of context. And the other thing we'll send out with the resources, there are a lot of them available online. And if you're able to share yours, I know it's a fabulous one, of how to make telecommuting work, setting up a formal space, setting up hours, setting up methods of communication. Another town hall could be what is working for you as a team for communication. What platforms are particularly helpful? What isn't helpful? What methods are helpful? And so that people can feel like they can talk through these issues and glean best practices from their colleagues. I think that's the best way to use this as an opportunity for this to be an inflection point for people to learn how to work effectively at a distance rather than an inflection point where they go like, oh my God, I'm going to be so glad, never going to telecommute again. I think that's the way to head off that backlash worry, which is a real one, real. One other issue that we wanted to talk about is how you create community in the context where we're isolated. So some organizations have tried virtual happy hours. Some organizations have tried all kinds of different things. I know that at my law school, we're having movie nights and all kinds of things. Have people tried sort of virtual happy hours? And has that been effective? Or do people just think, oh my goodness, the last thing I want is to be online for 1 millisecond more? Anybody want to jump in there?
This is Mary. Let me just put one little piece of context. Obviously, the social isolation is very extreme and unprecedented in our lifetime. So whether you have, you know, a family that is crazy because the kids are home all the time, or whether you're a single person, it's that alone is stressful. I think some of the things we've been talking about in terms of getting your company in a new direction, helping people on the front line, those kinds of meetings, not incessant, but much more attention to having those kinds of meetings to discuss pressure points, both build community, but also send a very powerful message that this company cares about its employees. And I think the long-term return on that kind of investment will be huge. Remember that in these difficult times, the company was there with help and with discussions and with community that made a difference in their lives. So it's such a win-win right now. And I'm particularly thinking of the parents with small children who are trying to juggle a double load. A lot of happy hour kinds of things might not be appropriate necessarily for them. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. And I think the most important thing are these group meetings where you talk about the concerns. But it may well be that you want to empower employees to set these things up whenever they feel the mood, so that there's kind of a self-organizing momentum gaining in the company. It's the people that have the time to organize these things can do it, and it's very much supported by the company.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And just to make clear about the town hall format, I'm talking about town halls or discussion groups that you can join if you want, not that are required. And I love the idea that Mary of having them bubble up from the bottom. And that's one of the things that HR can do or managers can do, as is communicate that people should be thinking about what kind of meetings would be helpful to them, and to let you know so that you can facilitate in setting them up. And that's a way to deal with the social isolation. The other thing, which is an obvious point, but being me, I feel really it's important to mention, is, of course, the levels of domestic violence have gone up very sharply, and the levels of people going to shelters have gone down, which is not a great combination. And if you have and the levels of family go to hotspots are really, really glowing hot. So you should assume, and we don't like to think about this, but you should assume that somebody you are employing is maybe dealing with these challenges, and in the resources that you send out, you should also be sending out that kind of domestic violence hotline, suicide prevention hotline, just as part of the resource guide. Does that make sense, Mary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Sad to say.
Joan, I was also going to add, when it comes to the town hall meeting, would you recommend having somebody there who's going to bubble up any ideas? We've been talking about how you can kind of institutionalize things.
Oh, yes.
So having somebody there who's going to take it to the top and think about, okay, based on what we heard in this meeting, what can we implement in terms of structure, in terms of tutorials for your elderly relatives around how to use things, whatever it may be, but what are some key takeaways that this organization can implement on a more systemic level so it isn't up to each parent to do this on their own?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the resource guide that we're sending around will make it much easier for organizations to send out resources for working parents, for example. I also think every organization, I assume that all organizations have it, but maybe they don't, should send out a successful telecommuting, protocol for telecommuting. And if you need help in that, we're happy to work with you and provide resources, but people should understand what it takes to make telecommuting work correctly. And they should have, each manager should be going through a protocol to make sure that they're setting up people up for successful telecommuting. Now, as we said at the top, the first step is not to be holding people to artificial standards of productivity in the context where they're trying to homeschool four kids. That's just not going to work. But also, as Jessamine pointed out, not accommodating the people who are homeschooling four kids by dumping all the work on the people without children. But all of that needs to be communicated. And the key, of course, to artificial standards of productivity is that the manager is going to be rigid with people below if the people above haven't communicated that they're not going to be rigid with the middle manager. And so that is an issue that is really addressed chiefly through communication. And, you know, there are some professional services firms that bill by the hour. Where this starts is for them to be really clear with themselves and to communicate clearly, this is kind of where we need to hit, folks. Mary, do you think that's realistic?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's a delicate balance right now. You know, this is so new that I think the most important message in this first couple of weeks is that we're all learning from this. Obviously, we're going to be changing what we expect for the whole year. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your clients. Do the best you can. I think that's a much more powerful message at the beginning. And as we start to see how all of this is impacting the business, then is the time to tweak the actual expectations and where we're going to be heading for the year. But I think right now, hand-holding is very much more important. You know, we'll know a lot more in a couple of weeks where this is actually going and what the long-term prognosis is.
Yeah, we don't know whether we're in for 3 weeks or until July. And until we know that, we kind of don't know what the impact on the business is going to be.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, every business in the country is going to take some kind of a hit. There's no question about it.
Yeah. The other thing for those in large companies, and Mary, I know you have some thoughts about this, about whether you're able to signal that you are really going to try to get through this without layoffs, is another thing that leaders should be thinking about. Do you want to hum a few bars, Mary, there?
Sure. You know, this is a very delicate issue because I think any company is quite leery about saying no layoffs at this point. But this is where authentic communication is really critical. I think you can see, Andrew Cuomo has been modeling some very good authenticity, giving the bad news, but then what's being done about it. And I think if a leadership team says nothing about this, that will be interpreted as it's in the cards. So you may actually be adding to the stress by being too closed-mouthed about this. So I think just being very realistic that, you know, if at the moment you're not thinking about layoffs, say that, you know, and that you will come back to everybody if that picture changes. But things are so uncertain right now that you want to make sure people know that we're trying to keep the operation together and will be for the, you know, for the next period of time. Again, it's the kind of thing that no communication will be interpreted in the most negative way possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just layoffs. It's again, we were talking about the business expectations for the year. Maybe the communication right now is this will have an impact. We want you to know that we understand that everybody's struggling. You're doing the best you can. We really appreciate it. And as things get clearer, we will communicate more about where we think the business is going. But for the moment, do the best you can, you know, that kind of thing.
And the other thing is for top management to consider is if layoffs become inevitable, do you want to control the costs through layoffs, or do you want to control the costs by reducing hours to a larger range of employees? So, of course, nobody can guarantee no layoffs. That's in the world, not the world that we're in. But I think Mary's guidance is really important, that if you say nothing, it's going to, you're feeding the fears. Whereas you're just saying we're not currently considering them, that you can really begin to try to control those fears. We wanted also to talk to you, the Women's Leadership Edge members, about what kinds of other support that we could give you during this period that would be helpful. A couple of things that we have thought about were a webinar for working parents who are juggling it all, to help them think through how to create these new routines, how to create these new structures, how to manage expectations, their own expectations of themselves, their expectations of their partner, if they have one, their expectations of their children. So that's one idea that we had. Another idea that's kind of emerged through in this conversation is maybe it would be helpful to have a webinar for managers to help them help ease their transition, sort of tools for success, for managing successfully in a remote environment, something like that. And one of the covert messages there would be the managing expectations message, but that would be the, so what kinds of things would be helpful for you? Jamie, do you have any ideas, or Chelsea, have you heard other people expressing any kinds of needs?
We've talked about providing, make sure, okay, good. Making sure I'm unmuted. Providing support for employees more generally. And something we're also thinking about is how do you not lose momentum on diversity and inclusion gains that you've been making at this time, where we know when there's a crisis that often that is the thing that gets buried and really deprioritized. How do you not lose major momentum there?
Yeah, yeah. That's also a situation for layoffs as well, that typically exacerbates the diversity and inclusion issue.
Yeah.
One thought I had is, obviously, this is not going to be a banner market for hiring people. You know, that's kind of changing your workforce through diversity hiring is probably not going to be a big item in the next 6 months. But what Catalyst has discovered is that this inclusive leadership style is absolutely the secret sauce to making a workplace more open for women and minorities. And it, because what it really does is it goes against the unconscious dominance, the dominant group, whatever group that is, a dominant group will be very blind to the needs of the non-dominants. And inclusive leadership cuts right through that and allows the non-dominant people to express their views, to show their stuff, essentially, and to take much greater advantage of the opportunities of the company and also to share their talents more deeply. So if we spent this time really getting people's skills up the curve on how to do that kind of leadership style, it would make a huge difference for the rapidity of diversity efforts coming out of this recession.
The other thing to remember about the diversity dimension is that we have had flows of women and people of color and other forms of diversity into these organizations, into our organizations for decades. The problem is we've also had flows out. And so if to the extent that hiring is not going to be booming, and I'm sure that's an understatement, it becomes all the more important to use tools like the tools and the bias interrupters toolkits at www.biasinterrupters, for example, to make sure that people are getting equal access to assignments, that people's performance evaluations are structured in a way that's not going to exacerbate diversity concerns and are fair.
I want to mention briefly, we've referenced the resources we're going to send out, and there are some people on the call who maybe haven't RSVP'd. So if you think you are going to have trouble accessing, we'll be emailing to everybody who's RSVP'd and posting the resources that we've referenced on this call online. But you can also email Chelsea Crawley at CrawleyCH, that's CROWLECH at uchastings.edu if you think there's going to be any issue accessing the materials.
And as a final question, from the chat, the meeting chat. Mary, can you talk a little bit about communicating with clients, to what extent that the organization should signal to clients what they're doing, what role that they can have in supporting clients, to the extent that you provide talking points for people to talk to their clients effectively about this?
Yeah, well, I think, the most important communication, I'm assuming most law firms are doing this effectively, is we are fully here for you. We're fully operational. We're not dropping any stitches that the market is changing, but don't worry about us. We're here for you. And then I think certainly law firms can help with all kinds of communications around emergency preparedness and what kinds of things to be thinking about. It's the time to hand out checklists of stuff to think about as you're facing remote learning, remote business generally. I think to the extent the financial markets are really changing radically, the business lawyers should be figuring out how to communicate, how to be effective in a market like this, what you can and what you can't expect. So I think there's just a heck of a lot of opportunity to think about that and to get these things rolling. The clients probably are very insecure in terms of how everything is changing, and communications from their law firm that they are there for them and that they will nothing has changed. We're able to handle all this. It would be very comforting.
Again, a silver lining, the opportunity to become a trusted counselor.
Exactly.
And to kind of display that. Well, folks, we hope this has been helpful. Please keep the communication with us going. We at Work Life Law and Women's Leadership Edge want to be helpful to you. So let us know that what we can do to support you. Jamie, do you want to add one more word?
Yeah, let us know if you want to have another call, if you want us to make a call available for different managers on your team, or if there's any other topic you'd be interested in us covering, please let us know. We're here for you, and we're all going to get through this together. So thanks for being here today. Hang in there and stay well.
Many thanks. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah, take care, everybody.
Thanks, bye-bye. Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.